We have the power and the ability to digress a bit. Broadcasting from a device built by a teenage genius using leftover parts from an erector set, this is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of Echo Chamber. Join me in my remote location in the middle of the desert is Dave Baker and Jared Hawkins. From South Milwaukee, we've got Ann Labs, and from Kingman, Kansas, we've got Thomas Townley. Today, we're discussing Resident Evil, the franchise, the films, and the video games. Now, all of them? No. Oh. Not always all of them.
Okay.
Has everybody seen all of them?
Well, I thought we were talking about the video games, and I'm like, there's a lot more video games than there is movies.
Only one. There's seven video games, six movies.
Umbrella discussion of
five golden rings, four
friends. Right. It all falls right under the umbrella.
Yeah,
that's the umbrella. Get it?
Yes.
Oh, I better not do that.
Don't go there.
I was about to do that, but no. All
right, let's start off with the movie. So we start off with Resident Evil, the final chapter, which, by the way, had a very nice little intro at the beginning.
Oh, boy.
Tell them about it, Jared.
Well, hang on. We got to get into the experience we had first. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Physical experience of it.
The physically nauseating experience of it.
Oh, no.
What happened?
We are in the armpit of Texas, which is also known as Killeen. For those Killeen listeners out there, you know it's true. Don't fight it. And we actually went to a theater that has long since been redone. And my past experiences have been great, but for some strange reason, these three old guys, two lazy guys and a drunk, decided to roll up into the theater and go to the earliest showing possible, and they stuck us in the worst theater.
Yeah, I don't know.
The projection sucked. The lighting was horrible. Basically, we listened to half the movie and only saw maybe a third of it, if we were lucky. I don't even know. We saw less than half the movie.
Yeah, there was a lot of shapes.
Yeah, there was a lot of shaky stuff going on, and I don't know. I was going to ask everybody present if they had that experience where, like, the creatures you could barely discern what they looked like because the camera work was so shaky, or was that the projector that we were experiencing?
It might be the movie because I watched one again this morning, and even there, I could see a lot better who was attacking who.
Yeah.
I couldn't in the my experience was worse than your guys.
Uh-oh.
You might have liked it if you didn't want to see the prologue. It was great because I bought tickets yesterday for the noon show, 12 noon. And then I get to the theater and I get my ticket and the ticket says 11:45.
Oh, fantastic.
You missed
all
your trailers.
The best part.
And so there were people coming in after my friend and I, almost at the point where the prologue was ending. So you might have enjoyed that because we all thought it started at noon when we bought.
All right, Thomas.
Well, I didn't really have much of an experience. I haven't really seen it yet, to tell you the truth.
Oh, you came here for the video game side or the previous film side. All right.
Good. Then, is this supposed to be a spoiler-free discussion? I
don't think it's supposed to be. No.
Sweet.
Feel free to spoil away for me. But
the first 15 minutes, we'll go ahead and catch you up because that was the only part we actually saw.
I didn't.
It was a very, very dark movie, not in the sense that it was dark crazy.
Literally.
You just couldn't see anything. And honestly, our discussion even during the movie is like, okay, is the effects in this so bad that they're trying to hide it by making it super dark? And are they moving the camera around to hide the fact that the actors aren't really that good at their...
The physical.
Yeah, the physical aspect.
Well, we know that both of them are very good at the physical aspect, especially...
Yeah, so why do all that?
Mila and... I can't remember his name all of a sudden.
Jura.
Yes.
Sir Jorah?
Yes.
Sir Jorah.
Sir Jorah.
Yeah. They could do the physical stuff. So I don't think they were hiding it. I think it was just supposed to bring like an intensity to it. You know, like in Saving Private Ryan when they blow the stuff up and everything rings and everything goes crazy. I mean,
in the beginning, it's daylight. We can actually see, for starters, and we never got a good look at that flying
thing. No, that flying thing with the one claw? Yeah, no, I never wrote really,
to. Oh,
could tell without. Got a good look at the end.
Yeah, I apologize though. So the first 15 minutes
is
brilliant in that, okay, we've had five other movies in the franchise, but we can cover it in under 15 minutes.
Yeah.
All five movies.
Yeah.
So that's basically well what they did. They did a very good job, and it's like, oh, okay, I didn't even have to watch the other five. They could have been complete crap, but I'm good.
And now that I think about it, I think like number three did the same thing, and like I said, I didn't see four and five. Mm-hmm. But I think number three did the kind of the same thing where they glossed over one and two at the beginning of the film.
Hmm. But yeah, no, it did a fantastic job. I felt like, okay, I understand the mechanics of this story. I don't know how the rest of you feel, but it was very, there was little to no imagination, honestly, because you could see everything that was coming.
Well, that's kind of true for all of the movies.
Yeah.
Alice kills zombies. Alice kills zombies. Alice fights Umbrella and kills zombies.
Yeah. Yeah. It's basically, it showed you the formula, and it's like, guess what? No plot twist. Here we go. No plot twist.
What do you mean?
The foreshadowing was such a slap in the face.
The original Alice shows up. That was a little bit of a twist. I didn't expect that. Well, you know, the first time she showed up, I was like, and they didn't show her face. Of course, they gave that away, yes. Yeah, they did. All right, fine. Wasn't
all
a twist.
The foreshadowing was so like, hey, guess what's coming?
All right.
Do you think then they kind of, did they wrap it up?
Not really. Open-ended.
They wrapped it and left questions, but they kind of put in just, this is the end of the story, kind of like at the end of 28 Days Later, when like, hey, everybody ran up to the snow because the zombies got frozen in the snow, and so we were safe there. They're not all gone, but they're starting to get eradicated.
Okay.
And Alice, spoiler alert, Alice roars off into the wasteland to spread humanity.
That's just
cure.
Yeah, it's like, hey, this is the last one, but instead of ending it where they could have by killing the protagonist, which I thought was poetic.
Yeah.
Nah, she's cured and she can go off into the distance riding a Ducati or whatever the frig it was, umbrella bike, and start up civilization.
And then they dump the original Alice's childhood memories into her head.
By being what, a whore?
What?
Sorry, a whore. Go ahead.
Not me. It's for me. They wrapped it up just in the, like I'm done with it.
Well, yeah. The fight of going back and forth with the company. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and even just the movie franchise. I'm pretty good now. I don't need any more.
I do not want any more.
She rode off into the sunset. That's what it was. It was that classic, just riding off into the sunset, chased by a giant flying clawed, one single clawed beast.
Yeah.
They had a claw.
She hit it with a claymore.
She did.
Yeah, she
that. That was cool.
That was a different one.
That
point
was fun
enemy,
when she tossed the claymore.
Point front like, at it's enemy.
It's a good thing she knows how to read. Because, I mean, whoever the cinematographer was made sure he zoomed in on that, placed this one away from you.
Well, that's one of the most interesting things about claymores is that they all actually say that on them.
Yeah,
place this towards enemy.
I mean, it's stamped.
Yeah. It's not just painted on there. It's...
Yeah.
It was a visually jarring experience, though, I felt, in that the editing was so quick.
Mm-hmm.
I could not get a good sense of what was happening, especially in the action sequences.
Yeah.
I know we had watched, you know, we watched the intro that was 15 minutes, and I was like, okay, this is cool. I'm totally up to speed.
Yes.
And then 15 minutes after that, I think, is whenever I leaned over to you and said, do you know what's happening?
Jared was sitting in the middle. So I leaned over to him and was like, is it just me? Or is all of this really hard to follow when they're kicking each other's butts?
Mm. Oh, man. Every action scene was just... it wasn't... Honestly, it wasn't the camera work. It was the editing. Because
it was the editing.
Hard, quick cuts followed by intensely fast-moving action. And I'm just like... and now they're in the dark, so I can't even... Hey, what just happened there? And Sam leans over, he's like, dude's head just got bit off. I'm like...
I did not even know that happened. So, do you want to discuss anything you liked about it?
Let's go to our folks back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back there.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you just saw it today. And
yes, I did.
So what'd you like?
I guess what I liked is, even though it's once again Alice fighting zombies and the evil corporation, I like her so much as a character. I like the character's journey. Even though her story, the Alice story, contradicted, I think, what I heard in 2, didn't it? If I remember. It was just, they do it very well. I just enjoyed seeing her go through her stuff. Mm-hmm. What I could see.
I do agree that I think Mila Jovovich acted her heart out in it, you know.
Oh yeah, no, she's great. She's the highlight of the film, I think, personally. She just gets right into that character and takes it.
Is this the part where I bring up Fifth Element? Lilu Multipass?
Multipass.
I mean, she handles the big bada booms very well.
Yep.
Did you know that the girl playing the young Alice is actually her daughter?
Say it again.
What?
The young Alice is Ever Anderson. I stayed and watched the credits. And that's her daughter. So, really?
Has it been since the original?
she's had two children since then. So, yeah, wow. She's a mom, and that's her daughter.
Well, she's a mom.
Yeah.
Another one of the reasons that it took us so long in between films was because of her kids. But
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a nice touch. Little, mm-hmm. You know, if you read Us magazine, you learn these things. But, you know.
Well, yeah, I saw the...
Along with the things about Ben Affleck and his relationships.
All the Bennifers he's had, you mean? Why do I know that?
I don't know that. So,
but you have, because I did find it pretty cool. I did appreciate when they did the time lapse on the face.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that they shared DNA. Because I was like, wow, whoever did that, man, kudos. That was some of the best work in the film, I thought. But, yeah, I mean, if they're working with similar DNA, then...
Makes sense.
That was a pretty easy thing to do.
But in number 2, wasn't the guy in the wheelchair, played by Jared Harris, his daughter was the one, because he invented the T-virus in number 2, right? Or am I... misremembering number 2?
See, what I got from the prologue is that it was her father that created.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I only had time to watch 1 this afternoon, so I'll have to watch 2 again. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, it's been so long since I've watched those films, but do they even mention her father until later? Because what we understand is that
It's almost like we're going to discuss the first 15 minutes because that's all we actually saw.
Now, her father in the movie was the guy who didn't think to poke a finger through the plastic bag over his head.
Yes, that guy.
He had 3 PhDs because he's a doctor. Yeah. Couldn't
chew through the plastic.
Yeah, pop a hole in the bag so he could breathe again.
I almost waited for Ian Glenn to say, "Did you tell anyone you're coming here?" before the plastic bag went over his head.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about that too was, I mean, okay, you established that dude was one cold-hearted SOB because. Then he tells the little girl, oh, you know, just wrapping up things with your father or something like that. I don't even think it was that clever of writing, but, you know, dang. Just in that short recap, it established everybody's, I can't use the word mythos, but character. It wasn't deep
just
enough.
Major character mythos. Traits.
Yeah, just major character traits. And totally brought me up to speed, but. It did. It kind of every foreshadowing little thing just was too much of a palm slap to the forehead, I thought. Because when they were on that big, huge roving vehicle, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And somebody is so, oh, geez, I'm trying to remember what took place on that part, but really?
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. You just interrupted my
Sorry.
Thought.
Go ahead.
But there was something that took place on there. Somebody made a comment, and like it cuts away, and then it comes back, and everybody's dead.
Yeah, to show that Ser Jorah killed everyone. He says, thank you for the water, and then it cuts back, and the implication is he's such a cold-hearted SOB that he killed everyone, even the guy who gave him the water, and now he's off to kill his clone.
And see,
that was beautiful.
We didn't even know about the clone stuff, but when you learn about the clone stuff from the original guy that's been brought out of cryosleep, he totally foreshadows it by saying, well, that's just it. You get them to believe that they're the real thing, and that's what drives them. And I'm like, oh, okay. So our protagonist here, Lilu,
Alice,
she's a clone. You know, like immediately gives that away. She's a clone. Oh, and since you're the original, this guy believes he's the original, and he's like some crazy religious dude.
Woo.
Yeah.
I mean, that led to a prison shanking. Right,
a beautiful prison shaking. Which
that was some Shaw shanking right there. So yeah, it kind of, I don't know. They just, every time they did the foreshadowing, it was like, ugh. Yeah. And then when he's like, how do you know it was me? When he was talking to the one dude that survived. Yeah, she's not that stupid. Well, you're the one guy that survived. So I knew you betrayed me.
Yeah.
So I was just like, come on, man. There were too many blatant. The foreshadowing was just like, it was written in so that you couldn't be surprised. You know, you're expecting it. That was the problem. I mean, no M. Night Shyamalan stuff happening here.
But what the twist?
That might be a good thing.
I know I said that to be a joke, but yeah, that is a good thing.
Okay, this is really bothering. Okay, Angela Ashford in Resident Evil 2, daughter of the Umbrella researcher and T-virus creator Dr. Charles Ashford, played by he was the guy in the wheelchair, and now in 6, it's somebody else, wasn't it? Or should I not care about these things?
Well, her dad wasn't the creator of the T-virus.
Okay.
He was the head of a corporation that created the T-virus. He was the head of Umbrella.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Okay. I stand corrected. Okay.
That's all right. I was confused about it too when he brought it up. I was like, wait a minute. Oh, that doesn't make sense. Oh, yes. Now it makes sense.
But then I did see number 2 before I saw the first one because at the time it was the only horror movie at the multiplex. And it's like, I don't care. I just want to see a horror movie. Okay. Zombies. I'll see it.
So now we've established that she's a zombie fan. I get it. You do the Walking Dead podcast then?
Nope. I quit the comic after issue 125, and my husband quit after 100, after the Glenn plate of spaghetti pizza head incident with all that.
What?
Uh-oh, spoilers.
Okay.
That was issue 100.
I didn't make that far on the comic either.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was a 2-page spread that will haunt you for the rest of your days.
All right, well, then I'll have to catch up on it.
Oh, my husband thought it was the most graphic thing he'd ever seen, and it was a black and white comic. It's like, oh my God, this is insane.
It was visceral. Yeah.
It was.
That's the only way I could explain it to people. It's just, it's so visceral, and it's not, it wasn't in color, was it?
No, it was black and white.
Yeah, you see?
Charlie Adler.
Your mind, yes, fills in the blanks on things, and
like this movie, like this movie, you had to fill in the blanks.
Well, yeah, see, we were mind wiped watching it, so
yeah, I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was not high cinema. This was not amazing horror, but it was fun. Yeah. You can predict some things, but
I'm sorry, but when you say high cinema, give me a definition. What is
a benchmark?
Yes. What is the high cinema?
Kubrick.
Scorsese.
Scorsese. It definitely is not Kubrick.
The Scorsese.
Oh yeah.
No.
Although I did
to
enjoy.
Me, yes, it is.
Oh.
Well, Brian De Palma or
definition
cinema that's violent or artistic or both violently artistic. This is not one of those things.
And again, why do people always think when after they meet me, my favorite movie is going to be Clockwork Orange? They don't know me.
It is my favorite movie.
They always look at me and say, I bet your favorite movie, Clockwork Orange.
You know, I get that, though.
Hey.
Clockwork Orange and Stand By Me. Those are my top two.
Maybe the old Ultraviolence.
Yeah. It looks like he needs a little Ultraviolence. So, was this movie Ultraviolence?
There was a fair share of it.
Yeah.
Somebody got cut up by a giant fan. That wasn't foreshadowing. Because hey, let's walk really slow through this giant fan. After we brought up the point that this place suffers from the power going off and on. Again, see, perfect case in point.
Mm-hmm. Back to that, I did enjoy that. You know, it came around full circle. So you ended up back in the original hive, and you had the cutting lasers. Scene.
Yeah, I did enjoy that.
From the original film.
I did.
I liked it.
She lost her fingers?
Yeah, well, you know, just the whole lasers that go flying around. I'm a big fan of lasers.
Mission Impossible.
Is it just me, or did this one just seem less violent than previous installments?
There was a whole lot. It kind of had a Lord of the Rings moment. There was a whole lot of running or walking, traveling. There was a lot of traveling going on, and not as much...
It's a post-apocalyptic road trip.
Yeah.
Resident Evil. Travelogue.
Didn't you tell me at one point it was like Lord of the Rings meets Mad Max?
Yeah. Yeah, very much. Very much.
Yeah.
I'm like, I can see.
No. And it's like, sounds like Resident Evil the Travelogue. Of course, now, the Lord of the Rings, you're spraying this out for 3. This, you're spraying it out for 6. And, do you think you could... You could make all 6 movies into one movie?
I think they did that in the first 15 minutes of the 6th one.
And nobody ever got to Tom Bombadil.
No! That's still one of my things that really upsets me about The Lord of the Rings is there was no Tom Bombadil. But back to Resident Evil.
Yeah.
I did. One thing I did enjoy, though, was the Sam's tanks. I did enjoy those tanks. They whenever they did the pan down and you see the just excessive tanks, it was like they were rolling down the street instead of 4 wheels, they had 4 tank treads. And my mind's turning. I'm like how many feet per gallon do those things get? Like, where do they get the fuel for these things? Why are the munition systems so wildly inaccurate? I mean, they were just decimating the road in front of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's the apocalypse. Where'd they get all the fuel?
Okay, see, now you're missing a part. What would you call this? The tower? The Chrysler tower. Building? That they took refuge in?
In Raccoon City?
Well, they had so much diesel fuel.
They had like, what, 1,000 gallons of fuel to just pour down this building?
There was tanker trucks. Fire, it showed them rolling a couple... They showed them rolling a couple 50-gallon drums and like pouring a little bit of fuel like into some rain gutter-looking things. Up. Yeah, and just thousands and thousands of gallons of fuel.
We get the Game of Thrones green fire
moment
where
the dragon's fire.
They just lit that crap up.
Yeah, it was intense. That was the best part.
That was one of the better parts.
Pour the fuel down in waterfalls and then just drop a flare in it, see it just billow up through that.
Traveled.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
And took out most of the horde, which was... The horde was pretty impressive, honestly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was all CGI. All of it. But, that was pretty cool. I mean, just a waterfall of flame.
Yeah, that was pretty epic. It
was enjoyable because that was one of the few parts we could see that was lit well.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my theme. I wanted to get up and go tell somebody, could you turn the house lights off? I can't see the movie.
Yeah.
But then I realized it was just those 2 lights up front keeping people from tripping that were coming in late. Hint, hint. Those people that can't read their tickets, right? I don't know. I mean, it had some good scenes. It had things. It didn't have those forced moments that it felt like, oh, let's just throw this in because it'll be cool.
Yeah,
it was. It did have a. I was surprised, honestly, that it was so congruent.
All right, quick minute and a half, everybody. Best part of the movie.
Lady first.
Oh, okay. Before her fake out non-death, Alice's decision to carry this through, this journey she's been on, and she's going to take that vial up to the surface. And like you guys said, Mila just has carried these movies, and that was just a great moment.
It was.
All right, Thomas.
Haven't seen the movie yet, but you have convinced me.
Oh yeah, I still haven't seen it.
You've convinced me to wait for Netflix.
Oh,
I'll watch it on Netflix.
All right, Dave.
I'm afraid that's the endorsement here.
For me, I think it was. There's a moment in the movie where Wesker is the dude who looks sort of like a Ken doll. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, he's constantly toggling the security system, like maximum and then manual. But so it's that guy, and he's hanging out in the building, right? Mm-hmm. And the moment that I loved, that I just loved, I did,
yeah.
was whenever he's standing there and he's like, my loyalties lie with this guy. I don't have to listen to you. And she goes, yeah, but I'm a member of the company. Mm-hmm. And you're fired, and the door goes wham on him. Now, I immediately flashed back to that moment that it almost mirrors this exactly in RoboCop,
yes.
where the CEO goes, Dick, you're fired. Uh-huh. And RoboCop goes, thank you. Bang, 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 bang.
Yes, that was a great scene. All right. What do you got for us there, Jared?
The prologue.
You like the prologue?
I can't give you much else. I mean, visually, I would say it hits some cues, but I couldn't see half the movie. I can't.
That was hard. That.
But yeah, they did a fantastic job of giving us the quick summation, catching us up, and continuing on with their little tale.
Yeah, they did a really good job of that.
That's all I got, though. Seriously.
Mine's still the clone shanking the heck kind of out of the original. That was just that sound. Yeah. That wet little slidey sound. That was brilliant. We're going to go ahead and take a break. And then we'll come back here and we'll go over the video games.
You're listening to The Echo Chamber. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Jedi, Sith, Tauntauns. No matter which side of the Force you claim, we are your go-to holocron for all the latest Star Wars news, rumors, and innuendo. Imperial Intelligence has got nothing on us. We've got your salacious crumbs every other Sunday at 6 p.m. Central U.S. exclusively on Sci-Fi for Me TV.
SciFiForMe.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse. And may the Force be with you.
Atomic Cotton, where Erica and Zach combine their passion for art and film to create wearable art. All original, made with a love for the genre. Coming to a convention near you very soon, or find them on the web at atomiccotton.com. Atomic Cotton, shirts and art for fans by fans.
I'm meteorologist Brian Busby. If you're traveling to a convention this weekend, especially if you're a cosplayer, it helps to know what the weather's going to be like. Rain and fur don't mix very well now, do they? That's why every week, Sci-Fi for Me gives you the weather forecast for every city hosting a convention. Those we have on our list, anyway. And that's worldwide, not just in the United States. It's part of our commitment to bring you content you won't find anywhere else. Just click on the Conventions tab over at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And now, back to the Echo Chamber. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
All right, everybody. Welcome back from the break. We're live here with Dave Baker, Jared Hawkins, Ann Labs, and Thomas Townley. We're discussing The Umbrella Corp and Resident Evil in the franchise in both film and video games. And to you, Dave.
Oh, gosh. man, for me, the Resident Evil, like the video games, it's got a history franchise. Mm-hmm. That's something, man. I think I started playing
PS1.
Yeah, like the original PS1. Yeah. That was actually something that I worked at Blockbuster, I took home a PS1.
You what?
Yeah, we rented them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you rent the game systems. So we were allowed to, on the weekends, Saturday through Sunday, you could take two movies or one console home. And so I took the PS1 with me most weekends and gamed at home. And while, you know, I went through a whole lot of franchises. I do remember the first Resident Evil or two. And, man, you know, the button mashing.
Oh,
like
yeah.
The time you main, you got to get the timing down or the dog's going to eat you.
Yeah.
You
know, that sort of stuff. Which we never see in the film.
Yeah.
Again, so, which was really nice.
That to me was the good callback was the dogs. But sadly,
I think the thing from the top that bit dude's head off was one of the lurkers.
Yeah.
Remember when you go in the hallway? Mm-hmm. You go in the hallway, or lickers or lurkers, whatever they were. You go in the hallway in that first in the first game.
Yeah.
And
do you know Tom?
Lickers?
Is that what they were?
Yeah, I think that was a licker. That sounds like a licker.
Not to be confused with clickers from The Last of Us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Your own franchise.
All
right, well, we got you on there, Thomas.
Yeah.
You came in pretty much for the video game segment of this.
This is a long, as he said, it was a long storied franchise. I mean, it came out and started out in 1996. It's been on just about every machine since. I mean, you can even have it on your phone. Mm-hmm. A Resident Evil game on your phone, so.
Virtual Boy?
Oh, yeah. I saw the ad for that on, like, my phone at one point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and this was Capcom that put this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. This was basically the first game in the survival horror genre. So this kind of made the entire genre from then on out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Parasite Eve predated that. Mm. You do remember Parasite Eve, right?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it was like the grandfather to Resident Evil. Resident Evil wouldn't have gained legs without Parasite Eve. Because it introduced the horror genre to gaming.
So Parasite Eve was the introduction to horror genre in gaming. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is the introduction to survival horror.
Yeah.
So, why not?
Yeah.
I mean, I felt like I was trying to survive in Parasite Eve, but yeah.
It was a huge milestone.
Like trying to survive every day of your life.
It was a huge milestone.
It's called life, son. Yeah.
It was a big milestone.
Now, Thomas, have you had a chance to play the number 7, which just recently came out?
No, I don't have very much time to play video games on consoles anymore.
So many gamers say that. It's sad.
That's why I still have a PS3.
We must prioritize things in life.
Yeah.
Trouble it, and buy a PS4.
The older you get, you know, the worse your reflexes get on your hands. All that button pressing just takes out my hands real quick.
You know what they need to come up with? They need to come up with one of those like late night TV, like as seen on TV game remotes with like big giant oversized buttons.
Well, you know what'd be cool? It was with virtual reality coming around, you know. This would be perfect for a Resident Evil virtual reality game. Put on your headset and you walk into your walls.
Oh, I got some crazy ones.
Yeah, there you go. Walk into the walls and jump out of your skin.
Yeah, I got some crazy ones coming down the pipeline.
Probably have to sign some legal boilerplate or something that says you can't sue if you die.
It's in the EULA. It's in the EULA. I agree.
Yeah.
Scroll. I want to play the game.
I haven't played any of the middle Resident Evil games, so I'm kind of curious, were the tanks a construct of the movie, or did they come from the games? Has anybody else seen them in the games? Because I'd love to drive one of those.
After like two, it pretty much just Resident Evil kind of became its own story and didn't really throw back to the games.
It has a lot of memorable characters. Like, people identify with the characters, and they want them to be their avatars and various things because it's like, oh, my gosh, this chick kicks butt, or this guy had this moment in this game. But for the most part, they were all, and correct me if I'm wrong, Thomas, they were all pretty self-contained games where you were getting from point A to point B.
Most of them, yeah.
It was very linear. It was not by any stretch of the imagination an open world thing. You had to do this objective to progress, but you were only progressing in such a small map.
I remember that in the first one where I was just like, running around. Yeah, I killed all the zombies in the house. Running around the house, trying to find that stupid secret door.
Mm-hmm. The door's locked.
Door's locked. It's like, well, where's the key? We don't know. Have fun. Good luck.
That's when you're supposed to type in the syntax, use key on green door. Mm-hmm. Did I just date myself?
You did. You did. But, you know, I did. I think I ran around that stupid house for like a day and a half before I finally found whatever it was that opened the door that got you out into the garden and then down into the hive.
And you know what sucked? Back in 96, you didn't really have a lot of books.
No, you could buy the book for like 30 bucks, which is a lot of money in 96.
That was the problem. You couldn't go to the interwebs and say, you do. How do I open the door?
We had game facts, but, you know, trying to get down on a dial-up.
Game facts, oh my God.
A dial-up, connection. You're just like, oh, this is, no.
Using that Alt-F function to try to find door, and then it just brings up all everything that says
door. Door. Problem was is that you're on the wrong console. If you had had a Nintendo, you would have had Nintendo Power.
Oh, and you could just.
That's right.
That's true. But I begged my folks to give me a connect or a subscription to that. I'm like, no, that's too expensive. That's silly.
You had to have it.
I spent $50 per game on you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not spending, I don't know, it was like 100, $200 a year for Nintendo Power.
I don't remember.
I used to have a lot of those Nintendo Powers, and I sold them on eBay for like $50. So I got two large boxes full of every Nintendo Power I had.
So you're not playing with power anymore.
Now I have the internet.
The internet. I did this. It used to be like, if I got a Nintendo Power, it was one that involved a game that I had, and we bought it at like Target. But it was never a subscription type thing. I had to find the one that I needed.
So Tom, how many of the Resident Evil games have you played?
Played one or two of them. Around to play a lot of them.
Honestly, it was never really my thing to play them. But
I was a big fan of them and Silent Hill. I mean, those are my jams.
I play first person games where you wander around scenes and find hidden objects. So that's about my level of expertise.
Puzzle games.
Yeah. But I do have a question since you brought up Silent Hill. When I watched that movie, again, it was the only horror movie playing. I had to go see it. There were parts of it where I thought, this is video game logic in the movie. And I don't see that in Resident Evil that much. And so, since you guys know the gamers more, to me, there was a scene in the bathroom in Silent Hill where she had to do some really bizarre task to get to the next step. And to me, I thought, that's video gamey. Or am I wrong?
No, you're right. And in the original Silent Hill, there was the moment in the schoolhouse when you're in the bathroom and you have to do something really weird to get outside into the like playground or something like that. So, yeah. And I really enjoyed Silent Hill. It didn't get the best reviews.
No.
But I enjoyed it being a huge fan of the franchise. I thought it was one of the better incarnations of a video game into a movie. Translation.
Yeah.
But comparatively, Resident Evil has gone over $1 billion in grosses. So it's doing something that movie and the Prince of Persia's aren't doing.
Is that overseas?
No.
$1 billion.
Everything.
It's domestic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They have a really big, really big following. I mean,
well, because see, the game, I mean, being a Capcom vehicle is huge over in Japan.
Right.
They enjoy it.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm just curious to see what the numbers would be for the movie.
Well,
well overseas.
Oh, yeah. Box Office Mojo, so far, the number six, foreign receipts are $64 million and domestic is 18. So by far, the majority of it is coming from overseas, not the U.S.
Like I said, it's a fun movie. It's not. It's like that remake of Dawn of the Dead.
Yay.
Was that great?
No.
No, but it was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the way I see the Resident Evil movies. It's like you go into this and you're not expecting or wanting something that terrifies you. However, I did jump about twice in the very beginning, but it was fun.
Okay.
Uh-oh. Something's really funny.
I don't know. They were whispering in each other's ears while I was talking, so I have no idea what's going on.
I was going to say that Resident Evil has then become the Ice Age. because it's kicking all kinds of butt overseas, but domestically it's like,
Okay, that's what it was. Because I wonder, because he did is he asked me what was the movie with the sloth in it, and I said Goonies.
Well, that is correct to a point.
We were having a discussion under the table because I couldn't remember Ice Age for the life of me, and I was going to say John Leguizamo.
That man's brilliant.
Oh, I love his one man stand up.
Oh yes,
stick on topic. On topic.
All right.
Yeah.
So Resident Evil the game. Sorry. This is what happens. Two lazy guys. I'm sorry.
Well, they've got comic books too now, don't they?
Yeah. I mean they have like little like I dare say teen novels.
You just said it.
Of the franchise.
And nobody dared you.
Like Halo, you know, those mm-hmm. like not really great novels, but those just serialized, mass-produced novels that tell stories in Resident Evil's universe.
Okay, but when you say not great novels, are you admitting openly that you read them?
No, I'm saying that.
Dang,
the majority of teen fiction isn't real great novels. They're just.
Mm-hmm. Oh no! So you're about to sidetrack me completely.
No, no. Stay on target. Stay on target.
This has branched out. Do comic books, novels, novelizations, sound dramas. Sound dramas.
See, that's the thing. People.
We were just talking about The Shadow earlier tonight.
Yeah. they relate so much to these characters that there's got to be fanfic out there.
Oh, yeah.
Guaranteed.
It's huge.
Live action films, animated sequels to the games, and a variety of associated merchandise such as action figures. And I know the action figures are pretty big.
I used to collect the action figures back in high school.
Weren't they Todd McFarlane?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a giant box full of Todd McFarlane action figures. I have no idea where it is.
We all do. Yeah. My name is Jared Hawkins.
I had an addiction.
I have many, many action figures in my basement. And my kids wonder why they haven't been opened.
It's that's how I grew up with my father.
My life is Toy Story 2.
Yes, but now all your toys are psychotic because they've been stuck in plastic for so long.
Uh-oh.
Their brains have been lacking oxygen this entire time.
Well, see, then I'm the opposite of you because I too had the tubs of action figures. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure I actually had one Resident Evil action figure as well.
That you played with.
No, they were all like in the box, and then once it reached the point where one day, I don't know why, but whenever my first kid turned like six, I was like, here, take these. And I just busted them all out and was like, man, they're toys. Have at it. I didn't even look them up to see how much they were worth. I was just like, go.
I did the same thing.
I was just buy two. One that I could display and one that would go in the box.
Oh, really? You're too smart. Or rich. Dang, I couldn't do that. No, I handed my son when he was like, I don't even know, maybe 2.5 or 3, a Colossus action figure from the Marvel series,
mm-hmm.
like the good quality ones.
Yeah.
He bit the thumb off. And then I had the forethought to go ahead and, hey, let's see how much that was. $60.
Mm-hmm. Well, my boys got from their great grandparents got Star Wars Black Edition figures.
Oh, wow.
And so my oldest is just tore that thing up and just like, yay! And now there's pieces everywhere. And my youngest is one, so I'm like, I'm gonna put this little C-3PO away somewhere.
Right. That's why you give them the BB-8. It doesn't come apart that easy.
Yeah. No. My son's dying because I've got the Last Planet Comic-Con. I got a full-size Voltron that I always wanted. And so
not the original.
Yeah, the one with the firing cat heads.
And the cats that come apart and put their tails together to make the body?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
How much?
It was $100.
You remember this one, don't you?
Cat heads.
But it's on top of my bookshelf. And my son looks at it. He's like, can I play with that, Daddy? I'm like, no.
No.
Yeah, Daddy hasn't even played with it. Daddy wanted one of those his entire life. All
right, so you go into my room. My wife put one of those IKEA things up.
Mm-hmm.
What do you call it? Shelf. Sorry. Oh, an IKEA shelf up there. It's a floating shelf or something. And it has like all my collector's Lego figurines and then like all my Kyoba figures, like all the high end stuff. And yeah, the kids just come in my room and they're like, oh, snap.
All right.
Straight off topic here. But
yeah, that's what I was saying. It's like time to get back on target. What do you got? You got some notes there, Dave?
Well, I just saw here that actually Resident Evil 7 is compatible with the PlayStation VR.
Too. Oh, geez.
That's why I said they got some things coming down the pipeline. And, yeah, that's definitely one that they wanted to have that functionality. So it's first person.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe you're not supposed to move around too much.
Yeah. Apparently there's...
You have to have the room free. It's kind of like the Wii stuff, you know? You have to make sure you're not able to injure yourself.
Yeah. Looks like some of the big complaints about are decreased resolution and physical discomfort.
Well, that's the thing about VR.
The wall.
That's what I'd be thinking, too.
Play when you're kicking your table.
Right in the wall.
And, oh, I paid how much for this headset, and I just ran into the wall and broke it?
Anne, have you got any thoughts on this?
No, you guys are totally up on me because I'm only approaching this from the movies. Never played the video game, so I'm learning from what you guys are telling me.
Oh, and by the way, Thomas, I just read there are two, it's either two or three, don't quote me on the three, DLCs.
Mm-hmm.
That are only available on the PS4 or, you know, to Sony. They're doing that whole we're in bed with Sony thing and they get them first type of deal.
Oh, yeah.
And they are not restricted, but, you know, they're like, this is some really scary stuff. And the first two DLCs are available to Sony. I think they made both available here. Probably this past release day. I can't remember. But, it's I cannot remember the name of the word of how they're described, but it's supposed to be something that it's like, this is so over the top, violent and scary, you know, it couldn't be released with the regular version, and you can only play it on Sony.
Resident Evil kind of made Sony a big, you know, what it is today.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely, between Resident Evil and Final Fantasy, that's what built the PlayStation.
Yeah.
I mean, that really is what, I mean, I remember buying the PlayStation 1 for Resident Evil and Final Fantasy 7.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Banned footage,
yes. That's what the DLCs are called, banned footage.
Ah,
so it's like, it was so scary and over the top that it was banned. So,
well, if you're releasing it, then it's not banned.
Oh, snap. Exactly.
Well, that's like unrated DVDs. Yeah, you put 3 minutes in there of a guy picking his nose. Just because the rating board didn't look at that part of the movie where the guy's picking his nose doesn't mean it's anything that deserves a different rating.
Mm-hmm.
Unrated.
Yeah, the frame of reference, it's free of context as well. It might be banned in Australia. You know, where they're much more strict. I mean,
it could
have some of that, you know, like an ankle showing.
Somebody smoking a cigarette. Oh, did you get that house, right?
Yep, nope. Yep.
It could have, you know, some of that gay and lesbian stuff going on. So,
yeah, maybe.
Can't play it in Germany.
It's true.
Sorry, Germany.
Is it really?
it's totally true. Dude, they almost banned Overwatch because of that. When they had
Really?
Tracer. Yeah, they had Tracer come out as, you know, liking the ladies.
Oh, that's fire.
But not in a bisexual sense.
But was it
everything's cool about it. People
was there action like, involved or was it just like these folks are gay?
Well, no. Germany came out and they were seriously considering and they had a huge fan base banning the game because of that.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry.
Welcome to the world.
We've come off topic. Well, I mean...
Oh, no, it's topic because Resident Evil's had that same effect in other countries. Yeah. Like, I know one of the Resident Evils, you can play it in Korea. You can buy it in Korea. And you go to Korea. I mean, come on, we've both been to Korea, and it's like, dude, you can...
buy anything in Korea.
Anything.
Literally.
Watch TV after 7.
But you can't get a black market copy of, I think it was Resident Evil 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's
I could
no...
be mistaken, but there was something, like, the violence...
There was the one...
Too much censorship.
There was the one that was set in Africa. Raccoon. That was really offensive. I think that was 5. I think
it was after
5.
Raccoon City, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, really yeah. games don't really have a continuous story, but it was so you're shooting Africans, period. And I'm like, whoa.
Yellow flag.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember reading several articles about how people found that very offensive, and yeah. I can understand why, you know.
But see, that's the world we live in. If the government didn't have an opinion on video games, where would we be? We'd be happy, for one.
It's like more interesting video games, I guess.
Yeah. Games that have more story?
It's like the different ages of comic books, you know, where the government got involved in censoring comics.
We can't have the whole thing out of his undies.
Well, actually... The government tried to get into censoring comics, and then they went, no, we'll do it ourselves.
Yeah.
Until Marvel said, you know what, this is a load of, you know, bull. We're gonna just censor ourselves.
They threw the drugs, the alcoholism, the drug use. Yeah, yeah. I mean, but that was the age of better storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
Humanizing everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Making them relatable.
Yeah, well, that's why Batman is so...
Not relatable because I'm not rich and my parents didn't die?
No, but he was human.
I hate Batman.
He was human. He had flaws. He had doubts. He wasn't a crazy... I know you hate Batman. You're a Superman fan.
This is another podcast. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I mean, and that was what made him rocket to stardom. Is like all your superheroes had these extraordinary powers, and Batman was just this rich guy with a lot of gadgets.
Yeah, because there were a lot of people like that. Sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sorry. I'm going to shut up now.
Oh, yeah.
And also superpowers.
First freaking way.
Everybody's got eye lasers.
Everybody's got eye lasers.
Mm. Now, that's something that's missing from Resident Evil. I could have used eye lasers.
Eye lasers would have been good.
Dude, if they had a god mode in Resident Evil,
mm-hmm.
Tom, what would have made Resident Evil just beyond awesome for you?
God mode, yeah. Be able to just, you know, pretty much go right through it without having to, you know, worry too much about dying.
I don't know. Maybe more useful would be something that would help you find all those film canisters or something like that.
Yeah, the film canisters.
Like, film canister radar.
That would have been actually very useful.
Lit up, let you know you're getting more.
Yeah, sometimes.
I mean, it was that first game was just amazing on so many different levels.
I'm going to ask this, and I do need an honest answer. Yeah. Dan, what would make the games better for you?
See, I played them.
I know.
I wouldn't know. The games?
Yeah, what would make the games better for you?
If they had a very easy mode that total newbies could get through.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. It's really cool hearing you guys talk about it, but
boxes of bullets. And then you had hard mode where you're like, you got an axe and 6 bullets and a revolver. Have fun at it. Resident Evil 2 was even worse because you had to collect. I mean, like, there were no caches of ammo in Resident Evil 2. It was like you had to go into the gun shop and you would go into the gun shop and you got 1 box of 45 ammo. And then you go out the streets where they're hoarding, you know, the horde is just running rampant. And you're just like, who do you shoot?
And now in the
But that was what hard mode was for Resident Evil 1.
In the age of microtransactions, you can buy the survival kit that gives you an edge. But no, and I like it. So what they should have implemented was a super soft plush unicorn mode. Is that what you're
doing? Yes, with rainbows and sprinkles and And Hello Kitty, yes.
No, Unikitty's crazy. She didn't kill
Hello Kitty.
Only when she's threatened.
The monsters for this game have been changed to Hello Kitty.
Yes.
I'm going to use her as a secret weapon.
Well, eventually she became the secret weapon, didn't she?
All right.
Well, we had a.
I think we're at closing comments.
I think we are at closing comments. So, overall, thoughts on any or all of the franchise?
Considering this franchise is 20 years old, I'm kind of wondering if they're going to reach a point where this is totally played out. They've mined it for everything that's there.
Yeah. No. They reached that point 5 years ago for me.
Oh, really?
There we go.
Well, I refer you back to the beginning of the podcast where Ann pointed out so clearly, it's very formulaic. You know what to expect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the same flipping thing with the games. You're going in, you're fighting the same flipping organization the entire time, aren't you?
Yes, and no.
It's the same problem.
Sometimes you're just trying to survive, and there are hints in what's going on. But in essence, you're always fighting Umbrella.
Here's my summation and closing comment.
Okay.
Break the cycle. Do something new.
Go Walking Dead and just be like, just trying to survive. Don't care what else is going on.
Oh.
Yeah.
And then they can introduce an easy mode with sunshine, unicorns, and Hello Kitty, and I will be there. Yes. Okay.
I know. And you throw cupcakes instead of smoking.
Cupcakes.
Could you imagine super kid friendly Resident Evil?
Get to work on it.
Come on, Capcom. There was a video game that did something silly like that, wasn't there?
I already got the title Girl Scouts. Hmm.
Scouts.
Wait, we probably can't use them.
They're probably kind of litigious.
I want to be able to throw cookies at things.
Cupcakes. We can do cupcakes.
Cupcakes. Yes.
Resident Evil the Bake Sale.
Mm-hmm. Just got an easy bake oven.
Gentlemen, you have an idea.
Sorry, Dave. What do you get?
I don't know. I sort of broke down at the throwing cupcakes.
All right, Thomas, how about you?
Let's have Ann's idea. Come on, Capcom, get to work on it.
Yeah.
Cupcake Resident Evil. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right, I would like to thank the two gentlemen sitting here with me, Jared Hawkins and Dave Baker, mm-hmm. And those joining us remotely, Ann Labs and Thomas Townley.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you very much. And if you'd like to contact us or make comments, send us an email. You can find us at Sci-Fi for Me at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Pinterest, and Twitch. Be sure to watch the Twitch channel if you like these two guys that are sitting here with me, because they like to do that thing.
We do the gaming thing.
Mm-hmm. And if you have any questions or comments, send them to echochamber@sci-fi4me.com. Thank you all for listening, and you have a wonderful evening.
This has been a presentation of Sci-Fi for Me Radio, copyright 2017, by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.